Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Welcome, you apple crumbles with custard. This is Cop On Podcast. You're absolutely 100% welcome. Whoever you are, wherever you are, across the world, whatever time it is, whatever you may be doing, maybe you're looking for some distraction, maybe you're doing the washing up, maybe you're driving in your car somewhere. I don't know who you are, where you are, what you're doing, but you're very welcome. This is Cop On Podcast. And this is the first stanza of a poem called The Weight of Nothing. Weight as in the heaviness, W-E-I-G-H-T. The Weight of Nothing by Amy Uyematsu. Everyone loves the disappearing coin, a bird pulled from an empty hat, the comfort of trusting a magician's hands, when we know we'll get something from what he takes away. Alan, you've been pimping out the podcast. That's absolutely wonderful, wonderful news. You said you want to say hello to a new listener. Hello, new listener. Who have you been sharing a podcast with, Alan?
Yeah, hi, thanks, Owen. Talk about distractions. I had the great pleasure of watching the Palace game with a wonderful girl, Audrey, who was a great distraction despite that game. Audrey's a Liverpool fan for years. Her dad introduced her to it, and her brother, her family, her kids, all Liverpool fans. So if you're listening, Patch, welcome to the Cop On family, and enjoyed watching the game with you, and hopefully you'll enjoy this podcast again. She listened to one or two of her old podcasts on and really liked them, especially your Deluche tones, that's the word I should say. So welcome, Audrey, and hopefully all your family are listening too.
Yeah, welcome indeed. Welcome indeed. Thank you very much, Alan. Yeah, I mean, at least someone got some pleasure out of the Crystal Palace game. It still haunts me as I'm walking around town thinking, my God, people are coming up to me on the street, tapping me on the shoulder as I weep into the gutter saying, are you okay? And I said, no, it's Palace, man, it's Palace. And they don't know what I'm talking about because I'm speaking English and they're speaking French. But how can you possibly translate? How can you possibly explain? Brian's back. Brian's here and Alan's here. So delighted to have you both. Brian, how are your nerves? Because I keep telling myself between each match, it's okay, I'm enjoying this. This is fun. And then as soon as the matches start, I'm a quivering wreck. I'm pacing up and down. There's, my heart's a flutter. How are you doing, Brian? Are you keeping your cool?
Yeah, no, not very well, actually. I have a lot of grown up still to do. There's me thinking I was all mature and grown up, sensible, but all it takes is a couple of bad games and the darkness comes. my family moved further and further away from the sitting room. My wife knows not to talk to me, particularly after the Palace game. It's like the dark side comes out and I just start screaming, having full-on conversations with players, even when the ball's moved on and I'm still talking to that player. Oh, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? I just got so angry the last few games. Swear to God. It was, I had to kind of really take a moment because I could almost see myself like, this is like circa 30s Brian with very big anger issues going at the television. But you know, it's fun. I'm enjoying it. It's what we buy the tickets for. It's exciting. So like in the game, I'm doing everything I can to be positive and to kind of hang in there. And I know that this is not going to be easy. We're going to have to fight for this tooth and nail. I do go a bit dark from time to time, but you know what? It's his last season. I'm enjoying every single second of it. So it's all fun. It's all box office to me at the moment.
Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff. I mean, it's been quite the ride. It's been quite the ride all throughout. What about you, Alan? I mean, same question, really. Are you hanging in there each match or are you enjoying it? Are you, philosophizing and thinking, well, I'm just going to enjoy every second. We won the League Cup. What else can we ask for, really?
Yeah. Try to keep it positive because at the beginning of the season, we would have been delighted to be in this situation. So I'm trying to keep it positive. And of course, you get peed off and it happens or you lose. I think the thing this season is the fact we've gone behind in so many games this season that, you know, you can only go to the well so many times. It was going to happen eventually that we'd lose these games. But keep the positive side out. We're still in it. You know, I think I've seen a stat last week that 6 games left and no team has ever won their last 6 games. So hopefully City slip up, Arsenal slip up, and we can be the first to win our last 6 games.
Well, I mean, that was what we were talking about on Cop On in the last one. Yeah, was a stat that I'd figured out myself. That
Yes, it was you actually. Yes, there you go.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's not that no one had ever done it. City did it in 2019, and Liverpool did it in 2019 as well. But the problem in 2019 was that City won their last 14 matches and won the league by a point, which is pretty sickening. So, you know, but that's not going to happen again because they're not as good. They might win all of their matches. Of course they might. But we're going to concentrate on us. We're going to talk about Everton, the Everton match, which is tomorrow night as we're recording this. We're going to have a nice preview about that. But to start off with, rattle and rolls going around about the new manager. You know, there was, I believe, David Ornstein tweeted that, what's his name? Ruben Amorim, my favourite candidate to take over from Jurgen Klopp, was being flown into London and is heavily linked with the West Ham job. And apparently today he flew to London on a private jet, and then news came out after that he wasn't likely to take the West Ham job. So this big link, and during that time, he went from being the favourite to take over at Liverpool to being way down the list. And now I've just checked on oddschecker.com or whatever. Don't gamble, people. It's a waste of time. But oddschecker.com says that Ruben Amorim is back being the number one favourite. And I wonder, I reckon David Ornstein is an Arsenal fan by memory. And I wonder if all of this is just a ruse to distract the players, Brian, because I don't know about you, but a lot of the players have social media. A lot of the players have, you know, access to all of these distracting stories and a lot of this bullshit that gets put out, even by, you know, respected journalists like David Ornstein. He doesn't get it right all the time. He said Liverpool were going to be sold last year by FSG, for example, and they haven't been. You know, they get it wrong, and I just wonder if this is all distraction tactics. And I just think mentally, Brian, we've got to focus on one game at a time, and there's a massive game tomorrow, and I want all of our players to be in a tent, inside a dome, underground in a cave from now until the end of the season. Just bring them out to play footy and then chuck them back in the cave. What do you think about the mentality going into it and the focus that we need, and we cannot afford to get distracted?
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll need parking facilities for Ali's horse as well, of course, in that case. Yes. You know, now that he's back, the beautiful man.
Yeah.
Yes. Look, I think now that Edwards is back at the helm, you know, it'll be business as usual. Nobody will know anything about who's signing as the new manager. There won't be a whiff of it. But it's the biggest story in football at the moment. And so it pushes clicks. You see a strapline with David Ornstein says this or that, and people click on it straight away because we all have an insatiable appetite for finding out who's going to take over. But I, you know, if Edwards wasn't in charge, I'd be giving it a little bit of my bandwidth, but because he's in charge, I just know we're not going to hear anything until Klopp officially leaves. And then almost instantly they'll make the announcement. The deal's probably already done. You know, the person's probably, it's already signed, sealed, and delivered. And I think our administrative headquarters are in London anyway, right? I'm not sure. Like, some of the offices are down there. I could be wrong on that, but I'm not worried about it in the slightest. I don't think the players are worried about it just yet as well, because they're in a title race. There's 5 games to go. You know, it's squeaky bum time to use an old whiskey nose kind of lingo. So yeah, I don't think any of these journalists will have a single clue who's coming. So because of that, I just don't even give it any credence at all.
It's a very good point. It would be classic Michael Edwards, in my opinion, to get West Ham to pay for a private jet to bring Amorim over to England just so that Edwards can have a cheeky coffee with him in Costa and get the deal done. You know, I don't want to pay for a private jet. West Ham can do that. Is there anyone you want, Brian, before I ask Alan about the new manager?
Yeah.
Is there anyone you want? Do you want?
I want him.
Do you want someone else? Yeah,
no, I think Amorim's, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly there, but he seems failing shabby. He seems really the best candidate out there at the risk of being boring, you know? I mean, he ticks an awful lot of boxes. And he seems like he has the shoulders to be able to carry the load, the weight of being taking over from Jurgen Klopp, you know? I think it's perfect, actually, even more perfect than Xabi, because yes, Xabi is great, and he's done such an amazing job over in Germany, and he's obviously got links to the clubs. But there's a lot of sentimentality there. It's almost like Gerrard taking over as well. Whereas this guy is a complete, I wouldn't say he's an unknown, but for people within the football world, he's been highly respected for a long, long time. He shares a lot of qualities that Klopp has, but he's his own man. And I'd be very, very happy if we got him. But honestly, I think with Edwards in charge, I'm hoping it's him, but I'm open to a curveball. You know, I'm open to some kind of
not a deserving,
but like somebody who we haven't even spoken about, you know.
Arnis Slot has come about. He's someone I was just looking at him before because I didn't know who he was. Arnis Slot is the manager of Feyenoord. He won the league last year, and he just last weekend won the Dutch Cup. So two trophies in two seasons for him. But I don't know. It doesn't excite as much as Amorim. But that would be a curveball. Otherwise, Gary O'Neill. You know, these are the. Yeah. I think Thiago Motta is doing very well at
we're
Bologna.
Dining at the top table now. We've worked so hard to get here, mm-hmm. you know. And I think if we're not signing the best players in the world, we have. I mean, somebody pointed this out in another show that we actually have a track record of choosing managers who come with some credentials or who are the next big thing or have a lot of kind of. Who are hot at the moment. And Alonso and this guy are the two top managers in the world right now. There's a reason why they're being mentioned in like the top four or five clubs in the world every week. It's because, you know, there's a real changing of the guards in the managerial world, right? There's all the big names are pushing on retirement. And there's the talent pool is not very deep when it comes to these big, big name managers. And he seems to be the biggest one out there. So I hope we get him.
I love it. Love the answer. And I totally agree. Alan, I think there's everyone, of course, is a step down from Jurgen Klopp. Excuse me. But it's just the size of the step, isn't it? I mean, you know, if it's on a ladder, it's just a rung or two down to the likes of Amorim and Xabi Alonso. But if you're talking about Pep Linders, then you're falling off the ladder, Buster Keaton style, aren't you? I don't know. Is there anyone else that tickles your fancy?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd have to echo what Brian said there. I thought from the beginning, I'm on record as saying that I think the manager is already signed and sealed. But the thing that might be throwing a spanner in the works is who would want to take over for Klopp? You know, would Alonso and Amorim possibly be thinking, no matter what I do after Klopp, it's going to be a disaster, you know? So that's the only thing that worries me, that maybe Alonso and Amorim said, no, we don't want the job. So then you're talking about an interim manager maybe for a year or two, and that's where you're getting all this De Zerbi and, God forbid, even Jose Mourinho.
I saw those links.
Yeah,
if we get Mourinho, I'm going to write the first complaint letter of my life.
Absolutely. Or the other thing as well, they're talking about Thomas Tuchel. We all know what he does. He comes to a club, first season does fairly all right, and second season falls out with the players. So we don't want anyone there. We don't want that in our club. So hopefully it is a ruse with Amorim and he is going to come, but definitely not any of them lads being mentioned, Gary O'Neill or any of them, no thanks. If I was stuck, and we're thinking of one or two year manager while we're waiting for Xabi or Amorim, I would say Rafa Benitez.
Interesting. That's a stopgap.
Yeah, he's available. He's out of a job. You know, he would.
I see the logic, but I disagree, Alan. Sorry to interrupt you there, because I think we need someone who's going to come in and stick with the attacking style. You know, I'd rather give Ange a go than Rafa, because I think the attacking freedom as well is very important, which is why De Zerbi, even though he's an attacking manager, he doesn't allow his players enough freedom, and that would be really against all of our attackers and their ideas, you know.
Yeah. But I'd agree 100%, but if you were giving me the choice between Jose and O'Neill and stuff, I would say Rafa for 1 year, if that was the stopgap.
Good call. Yeah, good call. Good call. And then maybe Jurgen would change his mind after a year and decide he missed Kirby. Because it's a good job to come into. I mean, all of the players who are under the age of 26, okay, I'm going to give you them as quickly as I can. Trainee Onyemara, Nala, Jaden Downs, Ben Doak, Lewis Kumas, Callum Scallon, Berry Clark, Stefan Bajcetic, Kate Gordon, James McConnell, Luke Chambers, Matthias Musiolowski, Fabian Mrozek, Connor Bradley, Harvey Elliott, Kwanzaa, Peter Luga, Tom Hill, Owen Beck, Gravenberg, Yaros, Curtis Jones, Soboslai, Darwin Nunez, Ibrahim Konate, Cody Gakpo, McAllister, Kelleher, and Trent. Quite the list of great
music
young
to my
players.
Ears.
there you go. So, you know, if Snoop Dogg is thinking of retiring and he needs some kind of, double. I mean, I don't really look like him, but I could certainly rap like him, as you can tell. So, just let me know, coponpodcast@gmail.com. Let's move on to Everton. Yes, Everton, the Ev, the Toffee Men, those dastardly Toffee Men. They are ridiculous. They are comical. They lost 6-0 to Chelsea. They are funny. I don't know. They won a match on the 17th of January against Crystal Palace, which isn't for everyone. Well done, Everton. They beat Crystal Palace 1-0. And apart from that, they beat Burnley, 10-man Burnley, 1-0 on the 6th of April. And then they won their last match against Nottingham Forest. So they've had 3 wins since the 16th of December. 2 of them this month, because this is Liverpool's luck, is that they get into their best form just before they play Liverpool. But they're still shocking, Brian, Everton. Have you seen them this year, or have you followed their results, or have you just steered well clear?
Yeah, no, I've watched them from time to time. Not great. Mm-hmm. Not great at all. And I just got a message in that apparently Jota's out for 2 weeks.
Jota's out for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Seems to be. I think that the good thing about the position that we find ourselves in now with these games coming up it's just crystal clear. There's no wriggle room at all. We know what we have to do every game. We got to go beat them. That's it. And we're more than capable of doing that. I mean, I hope for one. I don't know how you guys feel about this. I wouldn't be adverse against seeing the same kind of lineup again, or very similar kind of lineup to what he just put out the last game. Because I don't think any of the first teamers or the talent on the bench made a strong case for themselves when they came on in that game. Maybe they've just got too many games in their legs, or they haven't found form since they come back from injury or from AFCON, whatever. But I thought some parts of that game just got on the weekend. It was refreshing to see the movement again and some energy in our play. So I'm hoping he sticks with his ballsy choice of selection and goes with a very similar lineup.
Interesting. So let's go on to that. Let me see. So you. Because you wouldn't play horses for courses and put, for example, because Everton are going to be very physical, you wouldn't put Konate at centre-back or instead of Kwanzaa. You would keep Kwanzaa there.
You know what? I'm very comfortable with Kwanzaa in the team for any game. Okay. He looks good. He's like mini Joel. You know, he seems a little bit more consistent than Konate at the moment. I mean, Konate, when he's on it, is unplayable, you know, for sure. But in recent weeks sometimes he runs a little bit hot and cold at times in games, whereas I think Konsa's just been so consistent. Either way, you're kind of like I they're both great choices, to be honest with you. You can't really lose. I don't think the drop off is that big.
Okay, so we'd be happy with either.
The biggest compliment. What's that? Mm-hmm.
We'd be happy with either. Then we'd be happy with either player, Konate or Kwanzaa. Of course.
Yeah, big time. Yeah,
Alan, do you have anything to add on that? Are you the same?
Kwanzaa every time. Cool. Every time. Yeah, Konate is a good player, but I think I'm on record as not being his greatest fan. I think he's hot and cold and makes tackles. Seems to be sometimes I always feel he's slightly behind play for a second or two. Don't know why, but yeah, he's a good player. I'm not giving out, but I'm ranting. But plus his injury record and in and out of games, I would go Kwanzaa every day.
Mm-hmm. He's also French as well. You know, there is that.
Which is awful, of course. No, what do you mean? Of course. We are not. Vive la France. You should have seen the cakes in the boulangerie the other day, Brian. You would change your xenophobic comments to be, yes. Ibu, what a player. I don't know. I would go. I hear what you're saying, but I would go Konate because of the physicality of Konate. And I think he hasn't done very well with the ball compared to Kwanzaa. He's like, you know, quite significantly worse than Kwanzaa with the ball. If you look at the stats, Kwanzaa averaging around about 88% passing accuracy and Ibu around about 83%. So there's a 5% difference, and you need your centre backs to keep the ball. But I just think he could deal with the physicality of Everton, the threat of Everton, a bit better than Kwanzaa. But I don't know. Yeah, I'd be happy with either. But what we need to do... Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you know, the only thing is that, but that actually, him not being so good with the ball really, really, really affects our game. Okay. You know, because the ball goes to him so often. He has the ball more than any player in the team. And when we're not playing, like these last couple of games where we haven't played well, many times the ball's going back to Konate and he's doing nothing with it. And the whole team in the front are like standing on their heels. And I'm like screaming at the television, you know, don't give it back to him, because there's no dynamism. So whereas you had Matip in the team, look, I'm not saying he's like this normally. He's going through a bit of a small rough patch, but you know, if you have other players in the team, they're more dynamic with what they do with the ball. At the moment, Konate is just recycling the ball. He's just giving it from Verge, giving it back to Verge, getting it back. He's going sideways, he's going backwards, and it's too easy to play against. And it's almost like that position is the trigger a lot of the times for some of our creative attacks, you know? And when he's in it for the past week and a half or so, he hasn't added anything to the attack, and he's got a mistake in him at the moment. I would say.
He has tried to mix up his passing a bit, but he's got it completely wrong when he's tried to do long passes, and that's his big problem, Konate, or at least it has been his problem recently. So, yeah, okay, I get that. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. I mean, but the thing we need to do is going forward, we just, you know, football is... I remember I asked an ex-girlfriend of mine a long time ago what she thought about Liverpool, because I knew she didn't care about Liverpool at all. At the moment, we were going through a bad patch in the relationship and on the pitch with Liverpool Football Club. And I was saying, she was saying, I was like, you know, what should Liverpool do? And she said, well, why don't they just sign a player who kicks the ball into the goal? And I'm like, wow. That's genius, because I think at the time we had, you know, players like Robbie Keane and that, and it was like, do you know what? I think that's a good idea. And we need to kick the ball in the goal more than Everton, because in the last 12 games at Addison Park, Everton, we've drawn 9 and lost 3. Sorry, Everton have drawn 9 and lost 3. We've won 3 and drawn 9. And it's Everton's longest run without a home win against any opponent in their league history, which is very funny. 12 games, well done. So Goodison, we like going there, but we love a draw. 9 draws out of 12 does not reflect our superiority in terms of the players we've got, because we're way better than them. Alan, are you worried about this one? Are you worried in the context of the distractions of the new manager story, started by Arsenal fan David Ornstein? Are you worried about this match because they've won 2 of the last 3 matches and they hadn't won since January before then? I don't know. Are you worried about this one, or are you feeling you know, optimistic?
Normally you'd be worried about Everton because it's the derby, you know, it's just that game where you're worried about them. I'm actually happy that they won their last two of their last three games because it takes some of the pressure off them points wise, so they're not under as much pressure to win. So I'm hoping that will come to our advantage. But like Brian was saying there, I wouldn't change the team much. I would go for them with that team. I think they're there for the taking. They obviously are there for the taking. They're not a great team. Sean Dyche is doing a good job, in my view, getting results with them players. But no, I'm not overly worried, but at this time of season, you're just scared, you know, you're just scared to say too much. And look, I would like to see us going at them from the beginning, pin them back and just go out and beat them. Just beat them. Forget all the talk about managers and stuff. Just beat the feckers.
Giving the focus, you know, an early goal, get the Goodison fans booing like the seagulls in the meme. Yeah, get them doing that in the 10th minute or something. That would be lovely. In terms of Everton positionally, they attack down the left side 37% of the time. They attack down the right side 39% of the time. And they attack down the middle only 25% of the time. Most of their game is played in the middle third in terms of their action zones for the season. And going forward, 32% is in the opposition third and 27% is in their defensive third. So it's basically it's midfield, turgid, Sean Dyche. That's how he likes it. That's how he sets this Everton up. They've scored 17 goals from open play and 15 goals from set pieces. So almost as many goals from set pieces as from open play, which you would expect with Tarkowski at the back. When he comes forward for set pieces, he's incredibly dangerous, James Tarkowski. How are we going to deal with that without Ebu, Brian? Oh, are you muted?
Okay, yeah. Without Ebu, I just think, well, look, if Ebu's playing, fine, I'm happy with that. If Kwanzaa's playing, I'm also happy with that. I don't think the game's going to be won and lost on that alone. I mean, they will have a couple of chances.
Well, if Sean Dyche has something to do with it, it's going to be a 1-0 set piece win.
No, it's not. Okay. I mean, I think
can't be 1-0 on when we're going to score three goals.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, now that I'm hearing that Jota's out for 2 weeks, I'm just wondering, looking at our last lineup, who would get the nod? Because Diaz was, I like Diaz out on the right. I thought that was interesting having him out there, and I wonder if he would throw Salah in up front and have Diaz on the right. Or is that too much?
You know, because it's on the left.
Yeah, I love Gakpo. Gakpo's been my player. The last month, he's been the one player. I think, thank God, he's in the team. He's doing something always with the ball. He looks hungry. He's tenacious. Brilliant. I would love him to play Salah up front and keep Diaz out on the right. I think that would be a real deal with that, Everton. see how you go with that, and maybe put McAllister in for Grabenbich. And go with the same team, Endo, Grabenbich, because you're saying it's going to be a bit of a turgid affair in the middle. If you had to Endo, Grabenbich, and Harvey Elliott run around snapping at people's heels, could work. What do you think?
Oh, interesting. What do you reckon, Alan? What would you do in midfield and attack?
Yeah, well, McAllister has to come into the team, but apart from that, I agree with Brian there, and I agree with the front three changing around a bit, because I always thought that was a bit of a thing we didn't do enough. You know, we had Salah on the right, we had Diaz on the left, and whoever was in the middle. I always thought we should swap around, even in the middle of games, swap around. So that's very interesting. I think Diaz did great out on the right the other day. I'd like to see that more. Midfield, yeah, Harvey. I like Harvey in midfield. I like the way he bites and tackles and puts crosses into the box. Obviously, McAllister has to come into it, and I'd play Endo, because Endo, I just love Endo. I think he's fantastic. It's like Brian was saying before we started the pod about some fans are all behind the player and then all of a sudden they pick on him. Like Endo had one or two bad tackles there against Crystal Palace, and next thing he's the worst player in the world. I think he's brilliant. I think
people are already selling Mo Salah as well on various podcasts. That's
exactly
madness.
And this thing as well about Mo Salah, like, people are forgetting Mo Salah had a serious hamstring injury for the first time in his career. and he's coming back from that injury. And that's why he was being taken off after 60 minutes as well. They're nursing it. We all know players like the little weasel, Michael Owen, that lived off pace and had hamstring after hamstring after hamstring injury and were never right after it. So people have to be a bit patient with Mo. Come on, like, is he 5-6 years here scoring 20 goals a season? Give the man some credit, you know, give him a bit of time.
Yeah. Exactly, and he raises himself for the big games, you know, against Everton. He scores tons of goals. I don't know how many, but I'll have to find out. It's the last five matches there have been four draws and one win. 0-0, 0-0, 2-2, 0-0, and 4-1 two seasons ago, 21-22. Season was that was a great result at Goodison Park. But, you know, it would be a very different team tomorrow. Yeah, in terms of the midfield for tomorrow, I'm tempted again for the physicality to bring Szoboszlai in as someone who has been, not playing his best football, but someone who the more minutes you give him, the better he will be, the more rhythm he will have. Klopp loves talking about rhythm. And he's someone who's, you know, he's very tenacious as well as extremely skillful. So for me, Szoboszlai, Endo, I was trying to order, if anyone knows where to get them, I tried to have a look online for customized gum shields. I'd love to have Cop on Podcast gum shields in tribute of Endo. If anyone knows, copponpodcast@gmail.com. I play Endo, freaking love Endo, and McAllister because he had that rest against Fulham. So it's a bit harsh on Gravenberg and a bit harsh on Elliot. Who both did really well against Fulham. But I just think horses for courses kind of thing. They can both come off the bench when we're 3 or 4 nil up. But that would be my team. Yeah, and I love the idea of putting Salah up front, centre forward position, having him rotate around with Diaz and Gakpo. That's a strong team, very strong team. It is true about Jota. Jurgen Klopp confirmed it in his press conference. He's out for a couple of weeks, so he's likely to miss West Ham and Tottenham and all that. So that's very sad. In terms of Liverpool, for going forward, I mean, I don't know. Luis Diaz, he scored 8 goals, which is minus 3.58 of his XG. So he should be on 11 goals, maybe 12. Darwin Nunez is on 11 goals. But his XG is 17, so he's 6 goals behind. But Dominic Calvert-Lewin is 6.5 goals behind his XG, even more than Darwin Nunez. And when was the last time you were listening to any kind of BBC media and they were talking about Dominic Calvert-Lewin being the most wasteful striker in the league? No one does, because no one does their freaking homework. If you look at the stats, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the most wasteful striker in the league in terms of XG. So that's good news. Or am I tempting the fates? Who knows? Darwin, interesting that we're not starting Darwin Nunez. It's just confidence with him, Brian, isn't it? He's just lacking confidence. What's the prescription from Dr. Brian? Is it a massage and a sort of, you know, people you get, you hire people to sort of compliment him? I saw someone actually, a black and white photo of a guy with loads of lipstick on his face, right? He was a bald guy, he had no hair as well, so the kisses went all over him. And he was a lipstick tester, which was a real job back in the 1950s, where cosmetic companies would get women to put lipstick on and kiss him to see the color, how much would come off. And the photos of this guy, he looked very relaxed and very happy. And I would pay the cosmetic company to allow Darwin Nunez to have that job between now and tomorrow night. What would your prescription be?
I'd be the same. Yeah, I would get a bald guy with lipstick and get Darwin to kiss him, you know, so he can so he can find his calmness.
Good man, Brian.
This is a new sports psychology training exercise that we're going to do, Darwin. He won't understand what you're saying anyway. He's just like, kiss that bald guy over there. He'll score loads of goals. but you know, joking aside, I do think, strangely enough, you kind of hit the nail on the head there with Darwin. I think he looks like somebody who needs a sports psychologist, or you know, I do a little bit of sports coaching with NLP programming and stuff like that. It's amazing what you can achieve by just getting people's mindset correctly, because he seems like he's in his own head at the moment. He's overthinking.
Can you just explain, sorry to interrupt, what NLP is? I know about it, but can you explain what it is?
Yeah, so it's kind of short for neurolinguistic programming. And what it does is it just kind of, it anchors people in successful states. We worked with a rally driver once, and we got him to think of the moment where he felt like he was totally in flow. And actually, all top athletes, the flow state is what they want to be in when they're not thinking. They're just doing it. And they're just, they're instinctively playing. And we got this guy to think of when he was most in flow. And when rally driving, that's very important, because it just, numbers are coming at you and you just got to go with it. And when he thought about this, we told him to bring his rally driving wheel into the practice, and we anchored through a combination of thoughts, colors, words. Every time he put his hand on this rally wheel at a certain, like, you know, 5 o'clock and 11 o'clock, whatever, he would connect back to that state. That's when he was in that peak. He went on to win 12 races in a row, you know.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, because it's in your subconscious a lot of the time. So it's like not something, if you don't, the problem with a lot of top athletes or whatever is when they overthink and they start worrying about performance and what, and the crowd getting on their back, that split second is all it takes for everything to go completely haywire. But when they're playing on instinct, that's when they do the beautiful things, you know? And it seems like, you know, some of the goals he's scored have just been absolutely amazing. It's almost like he finds it easier to score a worldie than it is to score a simple tap in, because he's not expecting the worldie to go in. He's just hitting it. And it's like, well, if this goes in, it'll be amazing, but it probably won't go in. So he's not thinking about it. He's just striking the ball. Whereas when he's expected to score, he's hitting the side netting and stuff. I mean, everybody says he's such a brilliant player. He's box office. We all love him. But he seems like a player that's very susceptible to the mental aspect of the game. And when you play for a big club, it's all, you know, it's like welcome to the big show. You know, there's nowhere to hide. And there's only so, our love for him will only last so long. My God, when the crowd turn on him, it'll be messy. At the moment, we just love him. You know, the chaos machine, he can do whatever. You know, we give him a pink pass for, but his finishing is starting to annoy people, you know.
And he's running offside as well. That's what gets me. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, you could blame exactly. It on your teammates and say they should pass the ball a bit sooner, but at the same time, only you and Stan Collymore back in the 90s would be caught offside so many times. Just hold your run. Hang on a minute.
I mean, I would put my arm around him and just really use him in the right games at the right time, because he's his potential is unlimited, but he does strike me as a player that if the crowd get on his back, that could really, really affect him.
Go on, Alan. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to jump in there. Do you think maybe, Brian, that maybe because the fans are so with him, that maybe a little bit of criticism might do him good? Like, I've seen a game there not long after Diaz's parents were kidnapped and all that stuff, which was terrible, and Diaz had come back and there was a goal scored, and basically it was crossed in. Darwin mishit the ball virtually. Diaz got the ball and scored, and the whole crowd were singing Nunes, 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 you know. So do you think maybe that he's getting so much support that maybe a little bit of criticism from the fans might help him? I know we're not the type to criticize our players too much.
Are you saying we should kidnap his parents and maybe that will
no, push him on? That extreme.
Oh, no, sorry, I got confused. Okay.
No. But you know the way
he's, I know, I hear you.
No matter what he does, even if he does something terrible wrong, he puts a shot out over the sideline. The fans saying, Nunes, Nunes, Nunes. So, I don't know, maybe he's getting a bit too much, you know, a little bit of hardship. And I also think you're talking about horses for courses on. I've said it from the beginning. I said it last season. I said it this season. He's better off coming off the bench like he did against Newcastle. And when we were 1-0 down, he comes on, he causes chaos. scored two great goals that day. Brilliant. He started the next two games and didn't do anything. I just think there's certain players that come on off the bench and just do great. And to me, he's that player. At the moment, he could get better and improve with time and stuff. But it would also take some of the pressure off him for playing 90 minutes.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, get him off the bench when everyone's tired, and you get bring the chaos when everyone's tired. I totally agree. It makes a lot of sense. As you said, though, we don't like criticizing too much on Cop On podcast. And one positive, Alan, I want to ask you about is I think he's going to be key. Him staying fit for the remaining five games is going to be key to what happens this season, and that's Trent. Because he's come back now and he's shown in the past few appearances just what we've been missing. You know, it's so easy to take him for granted, but I don't know, one pass that immediately springs to mind is like an 80-yard pass across field for Luis Diaz to run onto. And only Trent can play that pass because everyone else overhits it, they underhit it, they don't get the angles quite right, or they don't even see it like most people. But Trent is just extraordinary. And there's something about it, like I referred, I was in a conversation with my friend about this, my friend John, who's a Man United fan, that Trent is the joy of football. He represents what is joyful about watching footy, because when he gets it right, like that free kick against Fulham or his passing, it's just beautiful to watch. So would you agree, Alan, that Trent is key to everything we're going to do for the remainder of these five games?
Yeah, he definitely is. And how we have missed them balls. Like Connor Bradley did a great job there and filled in brilliant, played brilliant. But when you see Trent back, like you said, putting in, whipping in them crosses, 70 yards, 30-yard passes, shooting a goal, he is vital, vital if we're going to stay in this. Something similar to yourself, I was actually talking to a United fan yesterday, and they were saying, very similar to you, that Trent reminds him of the David Beckham days when he got the ball.
Oh, he just wishes, come on.
Yeah, Beckham exactly.
Had nothing on Trent. Do you know, in terms of free kick goals, Trent, I believe he's one away from David Beckham now at age 25. So if he spends another five years... They've never seen the likes of Trent. They just don't know it.
But his point was the crosses that United scored so many. When they got the ball to him, they knew there was a good cross coming in, and that's what Trent does for us. But he is vital. Like you look at the situation. Five games to go. Chance of winning the Premier League after getting knocked out of Europe. You want to fight, and who better to come back than a Scouse lad? Come into the team, bring back that bit of hunger, anger. I know he's not an angry player on the pitch, but you need someone in this dressing room that's local, like Jones, that's pushing that extra bit, especially against Everton. I think he's vital to us now, and I can see him really pushing hard and pushing the rest of the players hard, and hopefully he can pull them along with him, because we all love Trent. Jeez, what a man.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Absolutely. And I mean, Brian, say something you love, you know, say something positive. Give us all hope for the next few games. Well, apart from Trent, or you can talk about Trent if you want. What else is making you feel really, really excited about the last five matches?
Oh, I mean, unfortunately, I don't want to stick on Trent, but Trent is he's exciting. You know, he's having him on the pitch is like having peak Salah on the pitch. You know, he's capable of creating magic at any stage. It doesn't matter where he is in the pitch, he could just ping the ball anywhere and create an attack out of nothing. You know, it's great having Ali back. You know, there's a couple of the saves that he's made already, even though the last game that I think he got down quite quick with his right hand. And I'm not sure many keepers save that ball. So, I mean, he's the difference maker also. And I don't know. It's like we've been through so much this season. I think, you know, as the fans, we need to sometimes take a step back and just remind ourselves of what we've been through. You know, if you had said to us, it's a bit of a cliche. If you had said to us, like, at the beginning of this season, five games to go, you know, chance to go top, you would have missed Salah for a big part of the season. You would have missed Trent for big parts of the season. You would have missed Alisson for big parts of the season. And you're playing kids for after Christmas, and you're still in the title race, and you've got a trophy already. We'd all be like biting our hands off. So we just got to learn as football fans to enjoy the madness, You know, this is why we do it. We all hate it, but if it's if it wasn't like this, we wouldn't tune in every week, right? So we've got a ticket at the top table for the business part of the season. We still care about the games. We still care about who's playing who, when they're playing, the results against Arsenal and Chelsea tomorrow, because you know we're in it. And so I'm excited about all of it. It's the whole thing. But Jesus, can you imagine if we just snatch it in the last moment and Joey Gomez comes up and scores a thunderbolt to win Liverpool the title? Can you just imagine that? I will book my flight. I'll be there for the parade. Oh my God.
I wouldn't need an aeroplane. I'll just be on adreadolene running nonstop. Yeah. Excellent.
We all have to see Joey Gomez score a goal before the end of the season. The world will stop. Jesus will return.
Then just retire at the top, Joey.
It will, wouldn't it? Could you imagine? People would just lose themselves. There'll be heart attacks left, right, and center. Joey Gomez scores! Breaking news on Sky.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Well, I hope he's not listening, because the amount of times he's taken on stupid shots because he wants to get that goal is really, really annoying. But he's done really well. You know, so Liverpool, as it stands, you're so right, Brian. There's so much excitement because we're in this great position. We're down to just 3 or 4 injuries compared to 14 a few months ago. So that's really good. You know, lots of options. We haven't talked about Curtis Jones very much when you mentioned him in passing, but as a Scouser, is a very good thing against the game against Everton. You know, we could use his skills, but yeah. So I don't know. I hope we have to go in a minute. So I hope everyone listening is keeping it together and focusing, using your NLP techniques to imagine getting in the flow state of as a supporter and putting the good juju, sending it towards Liverpool. There you go. Alan, do you have any more positive remarks or even negative remarks or neutral remarks before we end?
No, all positive. All positive for me. Looking forward to the game. And hopefully Chelsea can beat Arsenal and get the cat among the pigeons really good. So let's go and win. Simple.
Exactly. There's nothing we can do about Arsenal. I hear that Cole Palmer is out. So Arsenal played Wolves, who didn't have their best attacker, and now they're playing Chelsea, who don't have their best attacker. That could be lucky for Arsenal, but there's nothing we can do about them. Exactly, just look forward to the match, enjoy it. There you go. Got any predictions, Alan? Are you going for a 3-1, a 3-0?
Yeah, I'd go for 3-1.
3-1.
Yeah, I'm quite confident, to be honest.
I like it. And you, Brian?
Oh, I think it's going to be nervy. I think it's going to be a messy 1-0.
A Messi 1-0, on my word. We haven't even have we signed Messi? But no. yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, Messi 1-0. I'd take it. Oh, that would be great. That would be in some ways the best result we could possibly get, is a dirty Messi 1-0.
Joey Gomez off the crossbar, extra time.
There you go. but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? As it stands, Arsenal at 74 points, Liverpool 74 points, Man City 73 points. And as Kev Spider was saying, Spider_LFC, he was saying in the last episode, if we beat Everton, then we're 4 points ahead of Man City. And they'll have 2 games in hand, but who cares? We'll be 4 points ahead of them, and the pressure will be all up Guardiola, where he doesn't like it. Thank you very much, Brian and Alan. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you, the listener, for tuning in. This is Cop On. It's ad-free. If you ever get any ads, then do let me know, coponpodcast@gmail.com, because you shouldn't, because I hate ads. It's ad-free. It's all free. It's all for you, the LFC community, the worldwide LFC family. And take care. You'll never walk alone. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.